right, just let me do the talking here, okay? I mean, he's a lawyer, I'm an accountant, we speak the same language. I mean, obviously, accountants are a little more bad boy, but there's a respect there.
When will this be over?
Hey, Trevor, I've been talking to Ron about estate planning, and he is here to do some goodwill hunting.
He has to draw up a new will, so...
Yes, I understood, yeah. Mr. Wyatt. Thank you. As I've said before, I just don't like puns.
Oh, well, my accountant friends seem to enjoy them.
TBTL!
You are not good at this because you are not believable in your face, okay? Your face?
Yeah.
It's bad.
The reason why I chose Comic Sans was because the letter was intended to be humorous. I mean, it was supposed to show that the letter was, like a hilarious newspaper cartoon strip. Like Kathy.
So you've gone insane. That's fun.
I don't think my brother's that much funny, but I gotta give him some credit for that one. That's a pretty good spoof.
Why don't we go get a beer? I'll give you some advice, and we can have what the kids are calling a sausage fest.
Oh, it's time to do this, isn't it? Hi, everybody. Welcome to a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
What a fun, sexy time for you.
Got my headphone cord caught in the wheels of my office chair. Okay, now we got that set up. We're ready to go. Hi, my name is Luke Burbank. I am your host. Glad to be back.
Oh, yeah.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, Perchtop, Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. I was out on Thursday and Friday. Big thanks to Hannah Brooks Olson for filling in at the last minute. Today on the show, we're going to talk about where I was on Thursday and Friday. Got some personal news to talk about.
Got lots of news.
Don't worry, it's all good news. Everything's fine. I learned something this weekend, which is if you text somebody, "Hey, I have a little bit of personal news for you," and then you take like 10 minutes composing the text that has the personal news in it, it's really scary for people. It really freaks them out. So I just want to let you know, I got some news, but everything's good. I'm happy. I'm healthy. We are good. This is a good thing. We're going to get into it later on in the show. Also, because it's a Monday and because the wheels of sport, they don't stop turning just because you got personal news.
I've got lots of news.
We will do the TBTL No Point Conversion at the end of the program. So that's all stuff that will be happening. Also, speaking of people I should thank, I want to thank this guy for helping cover for me on Thursday and Friday of last week. He is, of course, the longest-running co-brogan of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their majesty. Television is no friend of his. His voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus. He lives by one simple rule, which is that lookin's free, but touchin' will cost ya. And he's got some hot ideas for a new film project.
My brain went to wonderful places for 50 Shades of Polish.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he joins us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my dude.
Well, that's a little disarming. It's also so disarming that I momentarily forgot to turn on my microphone. You know, you lead this show for 2 days, you know, you're surrounded by people, engineers, producers who are just like kind of supporting you. Now that I'm back in the support role, I kind of forgot my job, which is to turn on my microphone there.
Yeah, that'll happen. It's you got high on your own supply.
I did.
There, thinking that you were the boss of everything, and mm-hmm. And now you're back to co-broganing and also turning on and off the microphones.
Yeah, well, it's all right. So, you know, I got a taste. I flew close to the sun, but hopefully not too close, as they say.
How was your weekend? We're going to talk about sports coming up later. So I guess if I ask you how your weekend was, it's hard for you to answer without mentioning Cleveland Browns football. But like, other than that, did you have a nice, relaxing time? Was it a good weekend?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we're not talking sports here, should we just talk about my burgeoning farm in Stardew Valley, the video game that I downloaded this weekend? Did you think I was bullshitting you when I texted
totally
you this weekend
did.
And said, I'm going to go check in my virtual parsnips now? You thought that was just a spoof?
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
I 100% thought you were joking about the kind of thing you would do, but not that you were actually virtually farming parsnips and that they needed to be tended to.
Yes. Now, just for future reference, when you get a text from me that says, I'm going to check on my virtual parsnips now, never think that that is just a joke or a flight of fancy or something that I'm saying figuratively. It's quite literal.
How are they?
They are, you know, they aren't growing as well as I had hoped, but here's the deal. Our friend Hannah, who was on the show last week, as you just mentioned to me off the air that a video game that her partner plays is called Stardew Valley. Like, he'll play some real shoot 'em up games, like that Red Dead Redemption 2 that you were talking about the other day. Yeah.
Which I think I was talking about incorrectly. I don't know if this got corrected while I was out, but at one point when I was talking about combination Halloween costumes, somebody was in a outfit that was like Fury something, and I misunderstood it and thought it was a Red Dead Redemption 2 reference, and it wasn't. I don't remember what it was. Thank you for whoever sharp shot me on that, but for if that's important to people, I just want to let you know that I know that that wasn't the same guy.
And somebody else wrote in to say that those half and half costume spoof ideas was actually the brainchild of Jimmy Kimmel, that it's a segment on his show. Does that ring a bell? Yeah. So, whatever.
Well, sure. Possible.
Anyway.
Does Demi write for that show? Is that?
Maybe. More. The person who was tweeting
that.
I
don't want to create more need for sharpshooting when I'm trying to... People are just trying to sharpshoot us in peace, and I don't want to generate... I don't want the sharpshooting events to proliferate like you wish your parsnips are in your game.
So I will wrap up this story because it may be one of those roads that is leading to a tunnel that is merely a black mark painted on the side of a cliff. But Hannah was telling me that when her partner Keith is kind of in over his head, I guess, playing the shoot 'em up games, the fast paced games, and he needs to take a breather, then he will fire up his Stardew Valley video game where you play a gentleman farmer, a farmer who the game actually begins with a little kind of skit, very early Nintendo style, kind of like I'm trying to think of the graphics would be kind of like Super Mario Brothers or maybe even Zelda-esque. And it's fun. We have a fun time. It's retro like that.
Yeah.
And it begins where you're just some sort of a drone kind of worker in a cubicle farm somewhere. And but then your grandfather bequeaths you a plot of property he has that could be turned into a farm. And you reach your limit and the game begins with you going out to learn how to be a farmer. Sounds very actually Burbankian now that I say it out loud.
You know what? It really does. Is the whole game in that kind of retro graphic display? Or
it's really
just
fun. It's cool.
Oh, that does sound fun. I could kind of get into that. I was reading an article today in, I forget which kind of Deadspin or Gawker verse. Do we still consider it the Gawker universe, even though Gawker has been ripped out by its roots? I forget which one. You know what? Actually, I think this might have been part of the Vice family of internet products. But anyway, a person was writing. What caught my attention was it was a guy writing about how he really likes that Peloton kind of exercise bike that comes with a computer tablet loaded on it, and you can just basically do these virtual classes all the time. Mm-hmm. And two things about it stood out to me. First of all, it was a guy talking about how he thinks about his weight 50 times a day, and this helps quiet that. And I was like, oh, hello there, old friend called male body dysmorphia, weird self-doubt. So that immediately got me interested. And then he was saying that because he loves video games, this Peloton thing kind of taps into the same part of his brain that will get really into a game. And so he's found that to be great because as opposed to going to the gym, which is something he doesn't like doing, he finds himself riding this bike all the time because of the same part of his brain that lights up for virtual parsnip farming, lights up for building up his levels in Peloton. But the physical repercussions, if you will, are very positive to him doing that. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. I wonder if that would be something I'd be interested in.
Yeah, you know, in the gyms I go to, and they've been exclusively 24-hour fitnesses for the past decade or so. But, you know, I've lived in different cities. I've lived in different neighborhoods. So I've probably gone to like maybe 10 different ones on a somewhat regular basis in that time. And in a few of them, they have machines that somehow gamify the experience, but it's very, very limited. And I can't believe there isn't more of it. For example, when I was in LA, there were a couple of rowing machines right at the top of the stairs in the gym. And on the rowing machines, there was a very, very basic small computer in front of you, but one of them was a race. So you could just see your stats or whatever. But the one that really motivated me was when I was trying to beat the other blips on the screen, you know, try to beat the other virtual boats. That really worked for me. The same with a cycling machine. I don't usually cycle when I'm at the gym, but there's one at the one I go to now where you actually can kind of see the oval of the track and you can track yourself. I don't think you can compete against other robot bikers, but I wish you could. Like, I find that really motivating.
I think, and not to turn this into an ad for Peloton, because they don't sponsor the show, although if they're interested, send me a bike. I don't think that the Peloton thing is about your it's not a video game in the sense that you're, and maybe that's not even what you're talking about. It's really a way you can just be taking a soul cycle class from your house.
Yeah,
but you're right, the gamification, I mean, what they need to do is build a rowing machine that makes you think you're in the hydro race at a Mariners game.
Right. although I got to say, that's my least favorite.
That's high intensity training.
Yes.
If I've ever heard of it.
That's my least favorite part of the Jumbotron games. For people who don't know, like if you're at a baseball game and there's some sort of a Jumbotron game where a bunch of hats are moving around, like a hat trick game, you got to guess where the ball is and you got to keep your eyes on it. That's something that the crowd can get into. There are other versions of that, but they do one here at Safeco Field where it's just like three cartoon hydroplane boats. And you just start rooting for one at the beginning, and you hope it wins. It's just like rooting on a cartoon character. It does nothing for me.
But it does nothing for you?
It's my lead. It doesn't make sense. I don't understand why people get so into it.
I was going to say, it's like sociologists should study the high. Well, first of all, there's like in Seattle, there is a history of hydro culture because of Seafair, and you know, if you grew up in the area. And you're over a certain age, it's much less pronounced now, but it was a big deal, the Hydras. Oh boy, Oberto versus Atlas Van Lines, Chip Hanauer and the like. So that's kind of part of that's why they're Hydras, because that was like a big thing in Seattle.
Of course, yeah.
But I think sociologists should study it, because you're right. There's no reason for a person to develop the attachment to this otherwise random Hydro. There's no reason for people to be as attached as they are, but some of it has to do with the poor product on field, but I mean, people lose their damn shit over the hydro race, which the whole thing starts, unfolds and ends over the course of 25 seconds.
Yes.
And yet it's like you go from like, I don't know, yellow, red, green, I don't know, okay, yellow. And then 20 seconds later, you're like, if this mother effing boat doesn't mother effing win this race, sorry, children. You were going to have to hear the word mother effing at some point in your life. You are so – I'm saying most people, myself included, are so invested. You're the first person I've talked to who is not invested in it at all.
Yeah, and it might have to do with the fact that I didn't grow up here, so I don't have it like in my bones. I started to see it as an adult for the first time. But again, comparing it to other Jumbotron games that we've seen, right now the only other one I can think of is the hat trick. Like, there's some engagement there. Like, you got to keep your eyes on the screen and try to remember which hat is the bouncy ball under. If you get it right at the end, the crowd screams, hat number two, and you win. This one, though, it's like there's nothing. It's just it's like rooting for the Roadrunner versus Coyote. Like, it's all been scripted ahead of time.
This has to do, though, with you're right, it's not a test of skill, but this just gets into, I guess, how your brain is wired versus how my brain is wired in this one way, which is there's something about once I have decided this is the color of boat that I have my rooting interest on, then it becomes so important to me that it wins for reasons that, like, it makes no sense, but it just works for me. The ball under the hat thing, I'm interested in it as long as I think I know where the ball is. And at some point, it starts going really fast and someone jostles me, or I smell a whiff of cotton candy and my brain drifts. And then all of a sudden, I don't remember which one it is, and I am so uninterested in the game anymore. But man, as long as that – and let me just – for those who, like me, like a good old-fashioned computer-generated hydro race, just know this. If your hydro is leading towards the end, you're going to lose. Because that thing, is. There's going to be a gust of wind. It's going to flip. There's going to be – your best place you can be in the Mariners hydro race is in third place 5 seconds before the end of the race.
Right, right.
Because as Jesus once said, the proud will be brought low and the humble will be finishing first in the hydro race. I believe that was Jesus Montero, who is one of the people that runs the Diamond Vision at Safeco Field. He's in charge of scuttling whatever boat is winning that race. And it always gets me every time. I'm always deeply shocked when my boat is in first place and then a gust of wind blows it over and I don't win. It's one of the bigger tragedies that will happen to me on a given night, which I agree makes no sense.
Also, if I can go to the Bible, I think it was one of Paul's letters to the Corinthians where he says, if your boat is behind, you're about to lose your mind, I think is the rule of thumb.
It was Ephesians.
Sorry. I always, damn
That's
it.
Okay. It's all right. You know what? Stay in your lane of right. Co Brogan and chief sound engineer of the show. I will be the biblical scholar of this program. All right. Let's do this. It's right about that time. We should take a quick break and then we're going to come back. We'll thank some donors of the day. I'll talk about what I've been up to and we'll do this imaginary radio show. So don't go anywhere. This is TBTL. I love this song so much. I was jogging today, and I don't want to get too bogged down with this, but our friend Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, he wrote a book about running, and there's been this debate kind of happening in his Twitter feed about if listening to music while you jog shows that you're weak-minded or something. I mean, I don't know what side of it he's on. But there are people who basically think that to not listen to music and to listen to nature and all that is the best way to run. And other people think you shouldn't judge how people run. I'm in camp number two. Don't judge people. But today I feel like I found the perfect level, which was because this song is from whenever it's from. I don't know, the 70s, the 80s. It's like somehow mixed quieter. I don't know. I was listening to ASAP Ferg, The Trap Lord, and then it went into this song.
Oh, good.
And this
perfect.
Song was at like.
Way to go, algorithm.
Yeah, right. And so it was like this I was running in Whatcom Falls Park and this song came on and it was like half volume of everything else. And so I could hear the birds chirping and the river rushing, but I could still hear Stevie Nicks saying, "She was just a witch. She was just a witch." And I was like, "This is a perfect. I'm listening to music but also nature. This is a nice melding of the two ways of doing this jog thing."
And a good time of year for it. I've never really paid. I swear I've heard this song probably a million times. I would have never known it's called Gypsy. It's not on any of the records I happen to have by them. But it seems like this is good weather to be jogging and listening to this song.
Oh, man, so perfect. The leaves are beautiful and they're down everywhere. This is actually off the Beatles' Blue album.
The famous.
Part of why you. Yes. Hey, let's thank the donors of the day. These generous, wonderful people who are not a witch. They are not a witch. They are a donor of the day. And they're making the show possible today. Dominic Arrico of Federal Way, Washington. I think I'm doing the right people at the right moment, Andrew. I've been out for a couple days.
Oh,
and so,
that would be up to me. Did I mark the right people? I think so.
You did. I mean, I'm going off of the official Google Doc.
Okay.
So you just let me know if I'm not doing this right, but I think I am. Cecilia Hanley,
we're in the right
of
place.
Atlanta, GA, Laura Case Nagai of Puyallup, Washington, Rachel Langen Lundmark of Tumwater, Washington, and Laura O'Neill Dunn of Durham, North Carolina. We just had a run of three people who have, I don't know if they have hyphenated last names or if they just have two last names. I need to get out of my head on this, but I feel like, however, like, is that just coincidence? Laura Case Nagai, Rachel Langan Lundmark and Laura O'Neill Dunn? Or does the Google Doc organize people based on them having a last name that has two words in it?
I don't think there's any way that the Google Doc is organizing it that way. I think it is. Looking in about 2 months, we're going to have a Gilchrist Scott. You wait for it, Gilchrist Scott. This isn't your day.
Yeah.
But you're right.
No.
We'll thank you later. There's a long drought between now and then, though.
But are we eventually thanking Gil Scott Heron?
I'm not. That's not showing up, unfortunately.
Damn. All right. Listen, Dominic, Cecilia, Laura, Rachel, and other Laura, possibly Lara. Thank you so much. My thank you to you is punctuated by this amazing end of this song, Gypsy, which is getting quieter, but maybe getting louder if Andrew turns it up. Is that as loud as you can make it?
That's all we got. I'm giving it all we got.
It was just a fade. It was just a fade.
I almost jumped in and did the Scottish accent of Scotty from Star Trek, but I didn't. And that's my restraint showing.
I love the end of that song when they start, jamming out on the guitar. I really like that, because the way that I first started getting into that song was actually because it's used heavily in a girl talk song.
Oh.
I liked it. And so I kind of like ended up sort of reverse engineering back to the original song and being a fan of it. So anyway, thanks to the donors of the day. All right, let's get into this. This may be, Andrew, I have to say, like one of the only episodes of TBTL that I tend to actually refer my friends and family to, because the story I'm about to tell and what I'm about to talk about here, it'll be nice if this can just stand as sort of the record for it, so I don't have to repeat this story like 400 times to different individual people. I would just say, let's both bring our A game here, because this is really going to be probably the only episode of the show where if someone asks me a question, I go, you should go listen to episode 2764. From Monday, November 5th.
Well, that works for me, because I also want to tell my family about Stardew Valley. So I hope everybody started from the beginning.
I just had coffee that was 70% down my esophagus. Is that where coffee goes?
I think so.
It just came. I also realized that I'm drinking coffee today out of this mug from some TBTL listeners who also have an awesome podcast about the show CBS Sunday Morning, the Sunday Morning Experience podcast. And this mug holds, I think, 3 cups of coffee, because I made 6 cups and then I filled this coffee cup, and then half of the coffee in the coffee, maker was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite amped on coffee, and almost just lost some of it on the computer screen. Anyway, So also, before I get started, I just want to say I got a lot of thoughts going through my head right now, and so I may be a bit all over the map. But here's what I want to talk about. So I was out on Thursday and Friday. I have not actually listened to those shows, but my guess, Andrew, is that you said Luke is under the weather or something like that. And, that was not true, because I was not feeling good. But it wasn't because I was sick or had the flu or anything on those two particular days. I'll tell you what happened on Halloween night. I had been not drinking for a couple of weeks, and decided on Halloween, after being at home and making some delicious, I don't know why this is an important detail, but it was very delicious, some cauliflower fried rice situation, decided to have a couple of drinks. And things quickly spiraled out of control for me that night. I ended up deciding to go to my local casino, the Slow Pitch. And then when that closed, I ended up deciding to invite, I'd say, 60% of the staff of the casino back to Burbank Springs for a little after partying, because I was feeling no pain at that point. And then was hanging out, having a fun time, having more to drink. And then I would say the next awareness I came to, the next thing I really sort of knew was happening, was I was totally passed out, asleep, on the floor of the TV room with my neighbor Rich, who in this moment I didn't know if he was real, standing over me saying, "Hey, Luke, it's your neighbor Rich Do you know where you are? And what had happened was I had basically blacked out from drinking, and the house was a disaster. There were still people here, people from the casino, who, by the way, had come over at my request and were just being, you know, friendly towards me. You know, I was the one, I think I was by far and away the most out of control person in this situation. But I think a couple of things were happening for me there that were like extremely sort of deleterious. One was I hadn't been drinking that much. And so me just having some drinks at all, it really got on top of me. And the second thing was, and this is sort of part of, I guess, the larger conversation about my relationship with alcohol was, and I don't know if you know this or not, Andrew, if I'd mentioned this to you at some point in passing, but in my many attempts to sort of figure out my relationship with drinking, I had ordered something online called disulfiram. And disulfiram is basically a drug that if you take it, it makes you really allergic to alcohol. Had I told you that at some point?
You told me a long time ago that you were toying with the idea of getting them, or maybe you got them but you weren't using them, and they were just, did you have them for a while and you were just sitting there like kind of contemplating them for a while?
I think I was getting up the nerve to start taking a prescription product that I'd bought from a Canadian pharmacy online by way of China. I think I was sort of getting my nerve up on that. Disulfiram, people may have heard of it in the States. It's also known as Anabuse. And what it does effectively is it makes you allergic to alcohol. And the way that got started as an idea in my mind is I know somebody who was kind of a, I would say, moderate drinker. And then one day they woke up and they were just legit allergic to alcohol. And so they just stopped drinking. And their life was actually going pretty well because of that. And I asked, oh man, was it hard to quit? And they said, no, because I just kept getting sick when I would drink. And I remember thinking, God, wouldn't that be a cool way to stop drinking? I wish I was allergic to alcohol. And then because my brain works the way it does, I immediately started Googling around what are things you can take that will make you allergic to alcohol. So I had this stuff. I had been taking it for a while, but then I had stopped taking it. And they say it can take up to 14 days or something to leave your system. I had stopped taking it, by the way, because it made me feel really lethargic and I had a kind of metallic taste in my mouth all the time because it was in my system. Oh, and also because it was a prescription drug that I had ordered from like the dark web.
Right.
And it was probably a bad, I didn't literally order it from the dark web, but it was like a very dangerous move on my part and a stupid move. So anyway, fast forward to Halloween night, and I start having these drinks, and I think because of having been off of booze for a while, and also because of having still a certain amount of this stuff in my system, it just really, really, it just took me from zero to 160 really, really fast. And I ended up in a kind of state of affairs that I don't know if I've ever actually been in my life. I've been very drunk in my life, and many of those stories have been detailed here on the program. But this was a whole different thing. This was like me knowing where I was and then me not knowing, you know, where I was, what was going on, me having no awareness of the world, which is a pretty scary thing for me to go through. And as you might imagine, a more scary thing for Carrie to go through, because she was working in Seattle and she was trying to get a hold of me and she was not getting any response on Thursday morning and was kind of trying to figure out what was going on, because we communicate really, really regularly throughout the day. And so she got kind of freaked out because, unrelated to all of this, I'd been having a little bit of like lightheadedness at times. And when I was doing yard work, so I'd been to the doctor recently. The doctor who, by the way, was dressed as David S. Pumpkins, which was...
I saw your tweet.
I couldn't decide if that made me feel more or less confident in the medical care I was getting.
I've been to a doctor's appointment also on Halloween, and everybody there was dressed up. And I also wondered, is that what we want to see when we come to a doctor's office?
I felt very proud, though, that he said to me, you're the first person who's known what this costume is.
Right.
Anyway, so because I'd been having some lightheadedness and because she couldn't get a hold of me, this was a very scary thing for Carrie, as you might imagine, which is why she sent Rich over and why she raced back from work drove up here to Bellingham. Once she knew I was alive, it went from being, I think, for her fear that I'm not alive to fear about what the situation was going to be when she got here. And I also want to just say to people, I don't know if I'm going to cry when talking about all this stuff, but I have some tissues here. And if I do start to get emotional, I'm fine with that. I'm giving myself permission. I'll probably just quietly dab my tears, maybe play this if I need to buy some time. Mm-hmm. So
just leave the drop I have called Bike Horn Silly. Just leave that out of the equation.
You know what? You're still the co-Brogan of the show, Andrew, and that means you also have the right to play sound effects when you want. So if Bike Horn Silly helps you through this conversation we're having, I absolutely welcome it. So anyway, Carrie came up here and had her mom with her because it was she just was going to walk into the house that was like a tornado. It was like an 80s movie where a teenager throws a sneak party and the parents come home early. Just like shit everywhere, not literal feces, which is, I guess, let's thank God for small mercies. But just a really bad scene to come home to, and a really weird scene to come home to, involving your 42-year-old husband, who's an otherwise seemingly normal member of society. Anyway, so she came home, and they got me up off the floor, and got me into bed, and. And thus began, I guess, Thursday afternoon for me. I went to sleep. I mean, I had been sort of sleeping, but I basically slept all the way through Thursday night, well into Friday. Like, I sort of slept for, like, I think it was maybe 30 hours or something. Like, I was just out of it. And part of it was that I was really sleepy, and part of it was that I was really embarrassed to come out of my bedroom because I kept checking our parking lot and my mother-in-law's car was still here. Mm. And I kept just being like, oh, the shame. And I just kind of wanted her to leave so that I could then come out and Carrie and I could talk about things. But I did not have the opportunity to do that because at some point my mother-in-law, who's a saint, Cheryl, knocked on the bedroom door, came in, brought me some coffee, gave me a hug, told me I was okay and I was loved. And so I eventually emerged from the bedroom and we ordered some food. We watched some television. I guess you could say, ironically, Dr. Phil, which I felt like I was kind of a rolling Dr. Phil episode at this point. So I didn't know if we needed to also have it on television, but we did. We sort of doubled down on the dysfunction. And I sort of talked it out with both of them. And I guess all of that is to set up this point, which is that I have made the decision that will come as a surprise to no one, that I'm not going to drink anymore. And this is a decision that I have reached in some form or fashion, I would say 20 times in my life. Like, I have thought privately in my mind that I need to stop drinking many, many times. But then I've gone so far as to say to Carrie, I'm not going to drink anymore, maybe a handful of times. What I've never done that I remember anyway is called my family and said I'm not going to drink anymore, called my daughter and said I wasn't going to drink anymore, talked about it on this show in these terms. And I think the reason for that was because I always wanted to have in my back pocket the possibility that if I felt like drinking in a particular moment, I could, and I didn't want to get any grief from anyone or have it be weird or embarrassing. I wanted just to have the option because the idea of not ever drinking again was very, very scary to me for like a few reasons. One, the social element of it, like being the person who doesn't drink. I didn't want to seem like the not fun person. I've had a weird relationship with the idea of people close to me in my life who are sober, I think, because I think, and I want to also just put this, I want to put this kind of asterisk next to everything that I have been saying and will continue to say throughout the rest of this show while we're on this topic. I'm only talking about my experience here. I am not telling anybody else how to feel or what they should be doing. I'm not weighing in on anybody else's life as it relates to alcohol. So if I say something and it seems a little like broad or like sounds like I'm trying to weigh in on someone else's life. I'm not. I'm only talking about myself. But I think for a long time I've had a sort of weird feeling about the idea of sobriety in other people. And I think for me that was because I was worried those people were judging me. And I think somewhere in the back of my mind I knew that that was probably a thing that I needed to be doing. And so for me, the idea of now being the sober person, that's been really scary to me, just because I don't want to seem like a buzzkill. I also don't want to seem weak and pathetic. And I'll tell you, boy, if you are somebody like me who's been trying to keep your, I guess you could say, your demons and your inability to control things, if you're like me and you've been trying to keep that really kind of like hidden away from everyone, there's nothing like passing out on your floor and having Rich, your neighbor, and then your wife and your mother-in-law all have to show up to get you up off the floor. There's nothing like that to really bring it right out into the open. And so I kind of reached this point where I realized everybody knows about this now. All the secret anti-drinking pills you can take and all of the different ways that I had been trying to kind of like make some version of my life possible where I could be drinking but also have all of the other stuff that I wanted. Any like the secrecy surrounding it was, I think, mercifully on Thursday morning, the secrecy was completely and totally blown up. And I think because of how I was raised and because of kind of my, just my wiring, I think asking for help from people is really, really hard for me. I think it, for whatever reason. And I just hit this point where I had no choice but to admit that I did not have this under control and I needed help. And that was really humbling and really kind of embarrassing for me. And I have to tell you, as soon as I started telling people, including you, Andrew, it was so...
here we go. I told you.
Do it.
There it is.
Thank you.
Whew. Palate
Thank
cleanser.
You for taking the edge off.
Sure.
It was just, man, the relief.
Mm-hmm.
The relief that I felt just being able to say, man, I don't got this. And then the response from everybody, including you, Andrew. Thanks, man. The response from everybody to me saying, I don't got this, guys, has just been like incredible. And it's been the opposite of what I was afraid it would be. I mean, I guess if I really think about it logically and rationally, it would be insane if I told you, hey, man, I got to stop drinking. I've got a problem with this. And if you were like, man, you suck. Like that would be the weirdest response ever. So, I mean, I guess it's logical that people have just been loving and caring towards me. But even so, like just to experience that has been, it's been one of the more profound experiences of my life, honestly. And it's made me feel like, this is totally doable for me. I think that, a big part of this too was, like other times when I had kind of considered this, I mostly thought about all the stuff I was going to be losing, which is kind of a shockingly small bandwidth of fun. Like for me, the really fun part about being drunk is like, it's like about 25 seconds. It's basically when I'm the exact right amount of drunk, which is like, right, like sort of buzzed and it's starting to set in and it feels really good. And that's like a really nice place for me to be. And then there's everything else about it where it's sort of, for me anyway, diminishing returns. But there's something about that moment, that whatever 25 seconds is really powerful for me. And the idea of giving that up has, throughout my other times of kind of looking at this and thinking about this, the idea of giving up that moment of happiness, what feels like happiness, and that moment of being kind of numbed out has been like, it's been such a scary thing for me to contemplate that it's made me want to think about 8 million different plans where I can still have that, but not have all the downsides of alcohol. But where I have now found myself here on this Monday is like, if I'm being honest, I feel like euphoric. Because what I'm actually feeling this time is not the loss of that 25 seconds, but what I'm gaining of It's weird when you get choked up. It's like time stands still. Like that amount of time I wasn't talking, was that 3 hours?
It was actually, we hit the river twice. What about you,
what
man?
Is it when
you,
we hit what happens when we hit the river, but there has been no talking because I've been silently crying for 2.5 hours.
They call it the silent river. Hey, man, I'm super uncomfortable with silence, too. So where's my parade for not breaking the silence with a bike horn, you know?
You can, too, by the way.
No,
if you
I'm
need that, I will not be – I will so not be offended,
I'm
honestly.
Like, totally joking.
I know this is a really intense show, and I know this puts you in a – in a weird place of, like I said this to you before the show, because you knew obviously I was going to talk about this. I said, the last thing I want is for you to have wandered in to an intervention for someone, in this case me, that you didn't sign up for. Mm. So bike horn away as needed. But what I was starting to say was, I'm feeling kind of euphoric and have been honestly since like I really kind of just surrendered to this notion on Friday, I think, that it's like, for the first time in thinking about not drinking, I'm not thinking about the stuff that I'm not going to get to do, in quotes. I'm thinking about the stuff I'm going to get to do, because my life, when I was in a – and my drinking is a kind of – it's an odd thing because I'm not somebody who – I'm not physically addicted to alcohol, and I don't like have to drink every day, and I don't – I'm not like incapable of being around alcohol without wanting to just pour it into my – you know, into my mouth or something. Like it's not like in whatever, it's not in the movies, like an alcoholic in the movies. It's this other kind of weird version of it where sometimes it was totally under control and fine. And then sometimes it was not under control and fine. But when it was the periods of time where it was particularly not under control and fine, I was noticing that my world was just getting like really small. Like my world was kind of like, basically getting through all the stuff I had to do so I could go take a nap because I was wickedly hungover. And then after waking up from my nap, feeling way better, and then at some point thinking, yeah, well, you know, you earned it. You probably have a glass of wine here or a drink. And then sort of starting this process again where the part of my life that wasn't drinking or planning drinking or recovering from drinking was like, it was roughly 8 minutes a day. So if there during TBTL recordings, if you remember 8 good minutes of any show, I'd say that was the 8 minutes.
Were they right consecutive? Because I'm racking my brain.
No, sometimes it would be 1 minute during the show and okay. then 1 minute during a live wire meeting. I mean, it could. Yeah, they were
okay,
not
that
always.
Scans.
Yeah, they weren't strung together all the time. Sometimes they were. So, let's see. What else do I want to say about this? Any questions, by the way, from the class? Have I brought up anything that you are curious about? Is there anything that you want to talk about? And if not, that's totally fine too.
I mean, just one thing that I was, you know, thinking about over the weekend, and it seems, I think you're going to get much better advice from other people than me, especially on this topic. But, I was thinking about when Hannah was on the show on Friday. Happened to get an email from a listener who was like, kind of like, hey, how's the quitting smoking thing going? And that reminded me that I, you know, it's been 1 year since I smoked a cigarette. Now, I think that my journey on that was not even as difficult as most cigarette smokers because I was a very light smoker. And I think in many ways it's not comparable at all to the mountain that you're about to climb. But one of the scariest things for me, the thing I couldn't get my head around was kind of what you were describing, this idea of thinking about the future and imagining this situation. Well, how would I ever get through this situation without a cigarette? Like, that's just impossible. Like, how can I get through? And I would think about these things. I mean, I had a list of scenarios that it was like, I will never quit smoking because I could never be in this scenario without smoking. And, you know, there have been some, you know, kind of tough times when I really, really wanted a cigarette. But God, man, it was no – those scenarios that I'd set up, the ones that in my head were these just ghosts of impossibility, so many of those just were never borne out. Like they either just weren't that bad or the scenarios weren't there or it just – and I had spent, I think, so much time imagining scenarios that got in the way of me making a healthy decision. And then when I finally did it after decades, realizing that I was making a huge deal of them. Now, I think that – I mean, I hopefully there's something that you can think about there, too, as you kind of embark on this journey. But the other thing, as somebody who has been kind of in earnestness, like I've had in several important cases in my life, I've been part of interventions or something along the lines, or been part of somebody's life as they struggle with this and get on a road to sobriety. I think that in some way I'm saying that these moments that you're thinking of right now are probably not going to be as bad as you imagine, but there will probably also be a million little surprises that you weren't expecting that are going to come and kind of, you know, try to trip you up. And I think that it's really important that you surround yourself with people who are going to be, and also people who've taken this journey too. You know, I mean, you have people like me who absolutely love you and will be there for you, but also will not be able to identify with the journey that you're taking. So I think it's important have those people in your life too, so that you can call them, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, interestingly enough, as much as taking dark net, dark web, anti-drinking pills, as much as that's a bad idea, which it was. Although, can I just say this? I'm kind
Free
of a
shipping.
Little bit proud. I'm if you use the promo code DieselFurum/TBTL, free shipping on your first order. This is like a weird side tangent to this, but like, I'm kind of amazed those pills were real. Because like, if you're in China and some crazy person is in Bellingham and they're like, yeah, could you send me those pills that make me sick if I drink? Wouldn't you just send them sugar pills?
Right.
Like, what am I going to do? Literally, this weird package showed up with handwritten Chinese characters on it. The actual, like, medication, if you're going to call it that, the actual pills were sealed and they were printed with English letters. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if these were really made in China. I don't know how. But I'm just saying it's a minor – like – whoever, there's like a fairly honorable person somewhere sending out this terrible idea that is this disulfiram. Like, when it came, I was like, there's no way this is even really the thing they say it is. Mm-hmm.
But it did have
on Halloween that
it did have the physical effect that you thought it would. It made you, like, you were taking
absolutely.
Them before Halloween, right? I want to make sure I'm clear.
Yeah, I had taken them, to be honest. I mean, and like, if we're being honest, which we are here, I had taken them intermittently. And this is actually, and you know, so I would take them sometimes and, the upside would be that I would know, like, I can't drink. And the downside would be I would have some side effects from them, just of kind of, like, feeling lethargic and things like that. And so then if I had something coming up where I was like, oh, I probably want to have a drink there, I would try to, like, get off of it in enough heads-up time. But the thing I was going to say, for as bad of an idea as that was, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, the one thing that was kind of good about it, and this is to your point, was – I've actually had a lot of experiences over the last 6 months where I haven't been drinking in social situations, and it's been fine. Like, mm-hmm. I've basically had a trial run. Like, if this was 2 years ago, I think I would be a lot more afraid about what my life, being around people who are drinking and being at things where drinking's part of it, and, like, my ability to have fun in those situations minus alcohol. I think I'd be way more afraid of it than I am currently, which is not my way of saying – I'll get to this in a minute too, which is not my way of saying I don't need to get help over this. I don't need to be in intensive therapy. I don't need to make this like a really, really, really big focus of my life, because I do. But I have had a bunch of practice now of hanging out with people and being at events and being at things where drinking is happening. And to be honest, what I was sort of shocked by was how not big of a deal it was for me to not be drinking. Like, number one, nobody else cares. Number two, I totally had fun. Number three, it was – well, I mean, I guess in this case I had the sort of assistance of, you know, knowing that if I started drinking I might throw up on everyone or have some weird kind of you know, reaction to it. But I've had kind of a trial run of just not drinking around people, and I have been surprised at how not big of a deal it's been for me. So that's kind of nice to have that in my mind. In other words, to know that it's doable, which is not the same as saying – that means it's not going to be work for me, and I'm not going to – I'm in this very euphoric phase right now. But I also realize that the euphoria will ebb at some point, and whatever it is that goes on with me that causes me to, like, want to drink at times, whatever the kind of, like, internal stuff, that's obviously stuff I really need to address. I need to – and I've already started doing this. I've made contact with, like, a bunch of people this weekend – who I know to be sober, just to say, like, hey, can I talk to you about your experience with this? And those people have all been great about getting back to me and just kind of like being like, yeah, let's talk about it. This is kind of stuff to look for. This is, you know, things you might not expect about this process or whatever. I went to therapy this morning yeah, like an emergency therapy session. And
is this
like
with a
real
brand
therapy.
New therapist? This is
no. This is with the therapist. This is with the therapist that I've had in Bellingham for kind of a long time, and but have been inconsistent about going to see her because of scheduling. And by the way, this is just like such a small thing, but this is to the topic of how much my life is opening up without having to factor in alcohol. I emailed her over the weekend and I was like, hey, I'd really – could I see you this week if you have some time? I want to update you on where I'm at. I want to get your advice on some options for me, whether I should try to do outpatient or inpatient or, you know, various kind of therapy approaches to really trying to get to the root of why I've had this real problem with alcohol. And she said, yeah, I can see you on Monday. Can you do 8:30 a.m.? And I was like, yeah, of course, because like that's not an early time to me right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and I know I always have to say this too, we have listeners that get up at all hours of the day and night. They have kids, blah, blah, blah. 8:30 is not early to anyone. I understand that. But I mean, I have no like there would be a time when I would be like part of probably why I wasn't seeing this therapist was because the only times that were available were early in the morning. And I didn't like being up early in the morning because there's a good chance I would be nursing a hangover. Anyway. I was talking to her today and I was telling her that for me, the way that my stuff is kind of, I don't know, triggered or organized in my brain, I'm not the kind of person that like if I get bad news, I'm like, oh man, I need to go drink to not feel sad about this bad news. That's just not, I mean, that's happened a couple times, but this is not my general response to things. My deal is if I'm having fun, I feel like I want to have a drink because it's more fun. And if I'm feeling bored, I feel like I want to have a drink. And we were talking about – she was talking to me about boredom and how probably what's happening when I'm feeling what I think is boredom is that I'm kind of disconnecting from my experience in a way. So I'm sitting there and like nothing's going on to distract me. And probably some feelings I have are trying to – in the absence of anything else going on are looking to come in and kind of sit with me. And I don't maybe want to have those feelings or know how to process those feelings, whatever they might be. And so as a defense mechanism, my body kind of just goes, yeah, not today, Satan, aka feelings. And then just like says, we're bored. In other words, what I'm feeling is boredom is probably not that I'm just bored, probably some other stuff. But when I get that feeling of boredom, I want to sort of shift my experience and I want to like take something or drink something so that my experience is kind of shifted. And she said something to me that was really interesting. She said, you know, if you're able to be present, really present in the moment, she goes, just about every single moment of our life has a lot of fascinating shit going on. Mm. Like, you know, staring out the window at the grass, which is what I'm currently doing, or something like can be, there's a lot going on. At any time we're on this planet being alive, there's like a lot going on. But to me, it's historically, it's kind of felt like, if there's not enough, then I'm bored. Then I'm like, I want to kind of change that feeling. And then a lot of times that has been for me, let me have a drink or something. So I think that I need to work on, for all the talk I've done on this show about being present and being, you know, all that, I think that that's something I'm going to have to work on really hard is just learning how to like figure out what is fascinating about as many moments of my life as possible instead of wanting to just try to change my feeling by just like ingesting something. So then all of a sudden now it feels exciting and fun. The other thing that she recommended, this was like I'm excited about this, but this was like a borderline weird moment, is she recommended equine therapy, which is something having to do with horses, which I was like, yeah, sign me up. But then the next thing I said, this is the awkward part. I said, do I have to ride the horses? Because I don't really want to ride a horse because I think horses aren't into that. And then I saw this look on her face and I was like, I mean, if you ride horses, that's cool. And then she kind of like just said, she just moved past it. But I think she probably loves riding horses.
So wait, what did she tell you about equine therapy?
Not very much. I know that there's a – I don't know. I haven't – the details were scant. But what I think – what the sense I get is that I'm going to go out there. I don't even know where there is yet. Is it a herd? What's a collection of horses?
A parliament.
There's a parliament of horses. No, I'm going to go out to the group of horses And there's somebody there who's like a trained therapist who also knows about horses. And I asked, do I groom the horses? And she said, no, it's not really a grooming thing. She basically, the way she described it, she was like, it's like kind of a mirror for you, but it's like a 1,000-pound mirror. Hmm. I was like, cool, I guess we're learning choreography. Maybe we're doing a dance. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're going to do kind of like a partner dance thing. I don't know. But I'm super into it because that sounds like kind of interesting. I mean, I don't know if it'll work for me. It's better than doing acupressure on myself via the internet, which right. was my last harebrained therapeutic approach. No, I'm interested in it, but also I can't believe that somehow in the midst of all this, I found a way to offend the therapist by decrying horseback riding.
Right, right, yeah.
I bet you dollars to donuts that she loves horseback riding, and I just completely undermined her whole thing. Anyway,
according to a website I'm on, which is all about CRC Health, might be a local group, as a matter of
BoJack
fact.
BoJack Horse Therapy? Hey, can that be a show title?
Oh, man. Yeah, awesome. It can be. Oh, that would be exactly your luck. You're like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm really going to buckle down.
Oh,
new
God,
me. Then you
BoJack.
Show up, and it's BoJack Horseman, the most broken alcoholic horse possible. according to this website.
Well, hey, you know what? It would be a mirror.
It would be a mirror. It would be a good time, but... that's behind you now. Equine therapy actually is a form of experimental therapy, but it says it does involve grooming, feeding, haltering, and leading horses. At least this particular group, I guess, whose website I'm on. And you're supervised by a mental health professional, often with the support of a horse professional. Sounds kind of awesome.
It sounds very fun. I'm sure it gets intense if it's doing what it's supposed to do. I would just say, yeah, let's have a horse professional there
mm-hmm.
because the mental yeah. health professional is not going to help me if the horse is trampling
yeah,
me.
Right.
I don't need the mental health professional asking the horse why its mother caused it to stampede on me.
Right.
Like, let's make sure, let's err on the side of horse professional.
Right, let's start with that. Let's start with the physical basics and then get into the...
Yes, and then we'll get into the Jungian theory of what is up with me and my bullshit.
You know?
Anyway.
One thing also I was thinking about over the weekend was... You know, kind of the journey of you and the journey of TBTL and the journey that a lot of our longtime listeners have taken with us and with you since you were doing it for 5 years before I was a part of this mess. That wasn't – sorry, I didn't mean that. I meant since I turned it into a mess. You know, I just think that this is a lot of people – I think a lot of people who are listening right now have been through something similar to this that you're talking about or are considering maybe having it be the end of their road for alcohol. I get this from emails we get from people, from posts that people share on the Stens page. Some of them very, very revealing. I won't go into the detail of one because I don't know to what degree they want to public, but I know that somebody emailed both of us a very, very touching personal story of somebody who was talking about how she had to quit drinking after her own personal rock bottom moment, which I've thought about every day since, and how, you know, it's been a struggle for her and, you know, TBTL. She posted it because she was saying that TBTL helped her get through it at times. I'm sure we made it, and I'm not saying this to be funny either. You'll be able to tell because it's not funny. There's a chance that some of our stories of over-imbibing might have made it harder on that listener at times too. I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying is I think that if you feel like a big part of this must be kind of not just your personality but your persona and the persona of
yeah.
the show and this idea of yourself and the idea of TBTL from its origins of being you're a 30-year-old, I'm going to say kid, because we're in our 40s now and anybody younger than 37 is a kid. You started, you know, this late or this, you know, nighttime talk show and you would have these events and you'd all get drunk and sometimes get into fights and break noses. And I mean, alcohol was like... When you and Sean and Jen were doing the show, the fourth character was alcohol in a lot of ways. And I'm not saying that to condemn it. I mean, I think that your audience then was also probably a somewhat younger audience who were kind of, I don't know, enjoying that. And then in the pursuing years or the years since kind of started to evolve as we've evolved and as the show
right.
has evolved. And I just think that this idea that, you know, a TBTL event is going to have to always end with debauchery or something. I think we all kind of grew out of that a little bit anyway. And also, that's not to say that TBTL events are going to be, you know, totally dry events either. But I just think that I think TBTL, we've been lucky that this thing has been going on for 10 years, and it makes sense that the personalities and the show and our listeners who've come along the way are evolving and growing older and you know, taking in life a little bit differently.
I totally agree. I mean, the mythology of this show and my personal mythology around alcohol has been huge, has been a huge part of everything that's been talked about. And certainly that was a way for me to normalize or to make it seem like it was almost part of the job of me drinking really excessively at times, was to make it funny and make it part of the show and kind of be the guy who could drink people under the table, or at least, you know, try to. And yeah, I think that that was something that for a long time I was really afraid of. Even at other times when I had kind of secretly made a decision to myself, like, oh, you should probably stop drinking, even if I was thinking for a year, I always wanted to leave some kind of trap door, like maybe I won't drink for 5 years and then that will mean I'm okay. And because like the idea of being like, I can never drink again was so just was really hard for me to contemplate. And what's odd is I feel like I've had something, I'm not a religious person, but I've had what feels like almost a religious moment of something inside of me has just like shifted. Man, it's weird. Part of it is, and this is a kind of an odd footnote, I kind of like the fact that this went down on Halloween because I have a really hard time remembering dates, but it's like a really round number. It's just like, oh yeah, Halloween 2018. That was the last time I drank. Mm-hmm. Like that was, I had my last drink. Like, I don't know anybody else's experience, and I'm so newly into this. Like, I am so far from being the expert on it. But I've heard people talk about kind of like, you know, trying to quit drinking a bunch of times. And then there was just finally a time, or trying to quit anything, honestly. And then there was just the time when they just knew. It was just like, I'm done with that. And, like, that's the only way I could describe it. Again, that's not to say that I – that's not enough. That's not like – doesn't mean, hey, I'm cured. But I just know kind of like – I just know fundamentally in the core of my being that that was just it. Like it just was like, okay, that was it. And that's a really good feeling. Like that's just like – I just know somehow. But the thing I was going to say is the mythology around my drinking and the drinking of everybody on the show was really huge. And then I think for a long time, even when I would contemplate not drinking, I was nervous about coming on the show and saying it because I also – I didn't want to alienate people who really like to drink. And also who just like to drink in a very healthy way. Like there's a whole spectrum of this stuff. And there's lots of people listening right now who like to have a glass of wine with dinner. And it's an awesome part of their life. And there's no real downside to it. And I was always worried that if I started talking about not drinking, those people would feel either judged by me or somehow not included in the show or alienated. But, you know, one thing I never even thought about, which is pretty bad of me, was like all the people who don't drink anymore or who are struggling with their drinking, who are probably being alienated by me telling one story after another of getting completely blotto. So I want the people, wherever anybody is in their relationship with alcohol, I want you to feel totally included in the show still. I'm not going to try to turn this into an AA podcast at all. But also, I want to say to people who have maybe been sober for a while or who have been considering getting sober, whatever their relationship is, hey, welcome back. And like hit me up on email if you want to talk about this stuff and just tell me how you're doing with it or whatever. I don't have any answers. I'm like the person learning about it myself. But I regret the fact that I was thinking almost exclusively, I guess because I'm a narcissist, about the part of our listening group that is, you know, active drinkers, and to the somewhat of the exclusion of the people who are not, who've moved past that point of their life. And so I would like to have a show where it's inclusive for everybody. And I really want to, like I said, I want to be really, really clear that, as Cat Stevens said, there's a million ways to be. I'm not, I got no judgment for anybody about what they're doing at all. And so I feel like I have to keep saying that because, like, if I knew somebody and if I felt close to someone and they got sober, I think that I would really want to hear from them that they're completely okay with wherever I am at in my life, you know? And that's totally what I'm trying to say right now, like to the people listening to this show. And I don't want TBTL events to be dry events. I feel pretty confident that I'll be able to show up at a TBTL event and not get blotto. You know, so I don't want everyone else to have to change their life around me. But you know, something that is actually kind of, and then we should probably start talking about our pathetic football teams. Enough about my pathetic life. Let's talk about our pathetic football teams. I will say this. I think maybe the biggest, and I already talked about this a little bit, but maybe the biggest revelation about this for me has been understanding that it's okay for me to say, like, I need help. And I think that, like, so one way of talking about this would have been for me to say, like, everyone always, don't ever feel like, if you're around me, I'm talking to like my friends and stuff, and don't, like, nobody change their behavior because I'm around. Like, everybody should just keep, like, everyone should do 40 shots in my face so that they know that, like, no one has to change for me. And I think that that actually will be fine if that is what happens. But if I found myself being kind of like, yeah, that sort of stresses me out, and I needed to say to my friends, like, hey, let's watch the game, but could we, like, not drink during the game because I'm kind of struggling with that? Like, the fact that I'm even open to suggesting that, if that's how I was feeling, that's really big for me. Because I would rather die than suggest that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, to just ask anybody else to amend their behavior for me, it just, that's just the worst feeling for me. So I guess the point that, the fact that I think I would feel comfortable saying that, like, in other words, asking for help, like in that case, the help would be, hey, like, could we not do that, you know, because it'll make me not have this stress in the back of my mind. If, again, I don't think that's going to be the case, but if it were, the fact that I feel comfortable asking that, that makes me feel hopeful about my possibility for success. Because I know what's not going to be successful. Ordering secret pills from China. Tried that, limited success. So the idea that I'm going to start moving through the world asking for help if I need it and being open with kind of my, you know, the things that I don't have total control of, or the ways that I'm not feeling super strong. The idea of moving through the world that way is totally different for me and really makes me think I can probably do this. It was like, and then I really will wrap this up. I don't know if any people listening right now have had the same experience. I had this thought this morning. It was like my life for the last, I don't know how many years, for a good while now, has been trying to put this puzzle together, and each element of my life is a piece in the puzzle. And it's like having a good family life and having a interesting, rewarding professional life and having good physical health and having good friendships and drinking a lot. Being able to drink to excess when I want to is a piece. And I was just kept trying to fit this puzzle together, and I kept being like, why doesn't this fit? And I kept thinking, well, maybe if I shave every single piece of the puzzle, like if I just shave 20% off every piece, I can fit it all in. And then it was just like on whatever it was, Friday morning when I came to, I don't mean like literally on the floor, but after I'd gotten some sleep and stuff. And it was like, I was like, oh, this puzzle, this piece of drinking, it just doesn't fit. And I like tossed it out, and then like, holy shit, every other piece, I was just looking at the puzzle and I was like, damn, this all fits in here now. Like there was this one piece that I, and again, just talking about for me, kept trying to force in there, and every other piece I was having to trim down every other piece, and it still wasn't working. And so this idea that I'm just like, oh wow, this is like doable. Life is really doable for me minus that piece. That's a pretty good feeling here on this Monday. So anyway, thank you, Andrew, for you know, really helping me out last week, and thanks for being an awesome friend. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Now, you know, I just want to say, too, I know you're trying to wrap up, but I think that's another, yeah, I was talking about the evolution of the show, too, and you talking about your friends and being able to reach out. And, you know, in the same way that we are growing older and the show is growing older and changing, I mean, so is, you know, our friend circle, you know, like I think that there's maybe part of you was also kind of thinking like, well, how can I, you know, hang out with the core group of us Seattle friends, you know, and like, yeah, you know, I'm Party Luke. That's my reputation, Party Luke. You've never said that, but I, and I'm not saying that to be flip, but you know, that's part of it, right? Like, but I just don't think that like hey, listen, we all like to go out and have a good time, but like, especially this year in particular, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but I mean, we lost a friend who was totally healthy one moment and then just gone the next. And, you know, that's changed us. And I think fundamentally, so, you know, those of us who are
we
here
can't
for
both
you
cry at the same time.
Where's the goddamn bike horn?
There's a
shit
system
you could hear it.
No, we have to, like, let's please. One hand for you, one for the ship. We have to alternate our crying. No, but
you know what I mean? Like, I think that totally. Everybody is here going on this, not the same journey. I keep on saying the word journey, which I'll probably have to go out and re-edit other words in because I've lost my vocabulary today. But I just think that, like, I don't
like Steve Perry solo project.
yeah.
Or.
You know the people I'm talking about. I'm not going to call them out by name, but those of us that in the hardcore group of Seattle friends or whatever, I just don't think there's going to be a lot of, oh, shit, Luke doesn't drink anymore. That sucks. Like, I guess we're not going to invite him out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're all getting older. Our lives are changing. Like, I've seen significant changes in the lives of several of our friends. Not necessarily bad, just in some ways more mellow or, you know, kind of changing dynamics in our relationships. Our friends and Vives and I have been talking about that actually ever since we did lose Newman, and it's fine. Like, this is this is how life works.
Yeah. I for me, I have to keep saying that. It's like I was going to either be an increasingly diminishing version of myself until I just was gone, either dead or like just withered away somewhere, a husk of a human. Either that was going to be what happened for me, or I was just going to like decide that I wanted to get back to kind of living and then have this real possibility of a fulfilling life. And like I don't think there was a version of events where I continued to drink the way I was drinking for the next 40 years and everything was cool. Like, you know, another thing I've thought about for a while now and a goal that I kind of am holding in my mind a little bit is like 16-year-old me. So like I had never had a drink in my life when I was 16. And in fact, I was only drunk like one time when I was under the age of 21. So it was really not a part of my life. And I just like I was so happy when I was 16. You know, like I don't remember being like, God, there's nothing going on. Like 16-year-old Luke Burbank was not like, man, this is life is boring. Like life was so much fun for me, which I'm lucky that as a teenager, despite having extremely unflattering acne, which by the way has returned, so that's a nice thanks universe. This is really the time when I need to have like a constellation of zits in between my eyebrows. I just want to thank my higher power for that.
Think it's stress.
I call my higher. I think the fact that I've been eating pizza for three meals a day. Carrie was calling it healing weekend, which is code for, do you want me to get another pizza from Roundtable?
Yeah.
And the answer was yes.
Good.
But anyway, I've been thinking about 16-year-old me, and I've been like, you know, there was a time in my life when I was like a very happy person, and I did not need to alter myself to feel thrilled by life and interested in life. So I know that guy's still in there. I mean, that guy feels like he's really kind of busting out this weekend, which I started to call, I don't know if you know about this movie. There's a movie called The Lost Weekend. It's an old black and white film with Ray LaMond in it. Ray Milan, that is, where he's basically just like a drunk and he goes on this lost weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was calling this weekend The Found Weekend because like all I did was like wear my sweats, eat round table pizza and watch Netflix with Carrie. It was like the best weekend of my entire life. No joke. So I feel like I'm actually like, I'll tell you, 16-year-old Luke would have loved that weekend. Mm-hmm. He would have been like free pizza. I guess it's not free. I paid for it, but he would have been like unlimited pizza
that I can afford.
Like, yeah. Right. Seriously. Peter Williams and I used to like snow shovel people's driveways and sidewalks to get money to buy pizza. And then it'd be like, how much pizza can we get for $8? Yeah, the fact that I have money for pizza and Netflix and a beautiful, loving, caring wife and a dog who's she's all right. Don't get carried away, dude. Don't get cocky. She's listening to this.
I could hear her trotting.
Anyway, the fact that I have all of that would be very exciting to 16-year-old Luke. And honestly, it was very exciting to 42-year-old Luke. So that's sort of where things are at for me. I could go into more detail on a variety of things and responses from my family members and my daughter, but like, we would cross the river of silence 9,000 times. So maybe it's best that I just kind of leave it there. What I will say is, first of all, I'm getting a call from a telemarketer. How dare you call me on this most important of shows, the only TBTL that I will ever direct people towards. Can I say one more classically TBTL thing that I... Siri thinks that I'm... Siri thinks I'm talking to her now. There's a lot going on technologically in this room. Can I say one last thing before we move on to No Point?
Mm-hmm.
That is a very classic TBTL thing, in that it's inappropriate and petty and navel-gazing, as opposed to, you know, the broadly interesting universal topics that I've been covering so far. I came out of therapy and today, and I realized that the person behind me in therapy, I realized where they had parked, because there's like a parking space for the place, and I saw this woman's car, and she had one of those bumper stickers that said, "I love guns and coffee."
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with this?
No. Oh, this is a Starbucks thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a way when Starbucks said, "Hey, could you not bring loaded effing weapons into the coffee shop?" There was a bunch of people in the Northwest in particular, although I bet you it's all over the country, who wanted to protest because they wanted to be able to go to Starbucks, but they didn't want Starbucks to tell them to please leave the loaded weapons at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, this woman, I came out of the therapy and I noticed this person. She looked, I'll be honest, like she just was kind of in an emotionally fragile place, which happens. And I walked out and I realized that her car had a "I love guns and coffee" thing. And I was like, "I hope you don't get better."
Oh my God.
Is it good that I didn't tweet that thought?
With the name of the sign of your therapist in the background. Well, I wouldn't have
done that, but I seriously almost tweeted that, and then I was like, "Let's not." But that was the thought that went through. I know that's not fair, and we have listeners who are much more comfortable with a gun ownership than I am, and I think in a perfect world, guns are inanimate objects and they don't do the thing. It's people do the thing, but I don't know. That bumper sticker makes me. We have listeners who have that bumper sticker. We have former listeners who have that bumper sticker, Andrew.
Yeah. I got to say, here's a TBTL thing that I've been thinking about, too. Part of me wondered if this whole thing was just a big ruse to get me to admit that your neighbor Rich really exists. Like, you just told this whole story, and I'm obviously I can't say, "Oh, sure, Rich," in air quotes. So, congratulations, Luke. You won. Yeah.
But did you see how I flipped the script? I didn't know if Rich was real when he was standing over me.
That's right. See, I just let that one go. Boy.
Dude, I was seriously like,
when you're writing your letters to friends and accounting, I want you to remember that one in my letter, okay?
Rich is coming over tonight. We're going to eat some vegetarian low-carb lasagna together. So the good news is Rich and I are cool, but man, what a shit deal for him. Hey, could you go over and check on my husband, because I haven't been able to get a hold of him for like 5 hours. And then also he comes over and there's like cars in the parking area because there are people still like conked out here. Again, I can't stress enough, and they may even be listening. Nobody from the casino was the problem in this scenario. Everybody from the casino wanted to go home and go to sleep. I was just on this mission. Like, I was just feeling probably lonely, and like I just didn't want the party to end. So like a bunch of otherwise honestly like normal and very lovely people were dragged into my nightmare of like of just where I was at. But so you're Rich, you come over to the house, there's cars parked that you don't recognize. I mean, first of all, your mind goes somewhere very specific about what I'm up to, which was thankfully, I guess, or mercifully not what I was actually up to. But you come in and there's just this like, again, like 80s movie scene of party destruction. And then you got to go in. And then like, what's the opening on, like, how do you open that conversation to, like, let's just say I was sent over to Rich's house. And he was passed out on the floor. What's your opening at noon? Hey, man, how about that ball team? Like, where do you even start in that conversation?
Right.
So I feel really bad that he was put through that. poor guy. He's a sweetheart. He's such a good guy.
Was that one of the hardest? I mean, I'm sure a lot of your phone calls and reachings out were rough, but I would imagine that kind of making the first, you know, somewhat normalizing phone call to Rich might have been tough to invite him over.
Well, it was a text message because I was probably too scared for it to be a phone call. And you know, it was really hard. But again, this is where I'm not recommending this to people. If you are trying to get sober, I'm not saying go out with this kind of a bang like I did. But something that was kind of, in a weird way, good about it was, like, I just had no dignity left at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't minimize it to him. I couldn't be like, I couldn't spin it. You know, there was, like, no spinning it. And so because I couldn't spin it, I just had to be like, man, that was really humiliating for me, and I'm really sorry, and thank you so much for going through that thing that was, I'm sure, extremely uncomfortable for you. And as you might imagine, his response was lovely and, like, just as sweet and supportive as I could have ever hoped it would be. And as was the response from Carrie, as was the response from everybody I've talked to about this. And that, again, our listeners are smart people. I mean, they love this podcast, so how could they not be? But, like, if you're ever in the situation where you're the person who someone's reaching out to, particularly somebody who's been wronged by somebody, if you can find it in yourself to just be a soft place for them to land, I would highly recommend it to people, because the people in my life being that to me, that was really big, really, really big. It just made me feel like, oh, okay, people still love me. Because I think under all of this is a feeling that, like, I'm not lovable. And that if people get to see the real me, they'll figure out that I suck. And this was, you know, this was me not being able to manage my image at all. And people still loved me, and that was a really that really meant a lot to me. So anyway, now when Rich gets over here later, it could be a whole different story. He might be pissed.
Maybe. Well,
he might love guns and coffee. I don't know. I mean, that could have been his car. I don't know. So let's just. Let's TBD on that. I'll report tomorrow on how the whole thing went.
Okay, well, and as you tell the story of dinner tonight on tomorrow's show, I reserve the right to go back to my hilarious bit about how Rich doesn't exist. So everybody get ready for that. I know.
Listen,
it's something that everybody looks forward to.
I don't want to take that away from you.
Right.
We're all in on it.
No,
I think that bit stands up.
Yeah.
I think just because I forced a situation where we had to really reckon with his realness as a human, I don't think that diminishes the joke at all. In fact, you know what? I think it makes the joke stronger.
What are you going to do to get me to stop saying TVTL Daddy? That I'm worried about. All right.
It's like the Kelly Clarkson song. What doesn't kill Rich makes him stronger.
Perfect.
Stronger. Ooh, I'm finding a register of my voice I didn't
see. Wow. That's everything's coming
positive up. Positive effects of not being as drunk. Okay. I guess that's going to be it. Normally I'd apologize 8 million different ways, but I'm not going to do that today. This is my real life. That's what's going on. And that all just happened. So let's do this. Let's go out with a song. Are you cool with Bojack Horse Therapist, or what is it?
Yes, that's fine. Bojack Horse Therapist is good. I also wrote down, is my restraint showing, and doubling down on the dysfunction. But probably Bojack Horse Therapist is maybe. I don't know.
Like that it's not so on the nose.
Right.
I don't want the title or the photo to just, like, reek of, like, pathos. So maybe Bojack Horse Therapist is a good is a good head fake for everyone. And then they can tune in and be like, damn, that's some pathos. I heard a song that I am crazy about that I was hoping we could go out with. It's a new song from Jay Maskus. He's the Dinosaur Jr. guy.
Oh, this is a new one. I saw it in the rundown. I didn't know it was new. Oh.
Yeah, it's called Elastic Days. I think he has a new – sorry, I'm this having just power using – 4 to 8 cups of coffee during the show is now I'm getting the repeats, as our friend Sean would say.
My God, this was, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this was, you sent me the YouTube link to this. This was published today by Sub Pop Records.
Yeah, and my
this
friend,
is as new as it
my
gets.
Friend, yeah, my friend Whitney sent it to me, and it's the only way that I know about it. But he's got a record coming out in a few days, and this is kind of, I think, like a preview, this song.
Yeah.
I love it. I've heard this guy is very tough to interview, but let's not get bogged down in the negative about Jay Mascis of Dinosaur Jr. Let's get bogged down in the positive, which is this song, Elastic Days, is rad. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to play this song. We're going to say goodbye to everybody who doesn't want to hear about sports. And then we'll come back and we'll do a TBTL No Point Conversion, where I'll talk about my heroin addiction and how my other neighbor found me in the throes of that. And then I will call it a day. So that was you could say, poorly timed joke. You know, I'm kind of proud of myself that I didn't do more of those right. poorly timed jokes. Like, I was fighting it the whole show, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Because this is uncomfortable for me, and because I constantly want, like, if I'm having a serious moment, I want to protect myself from that. I thought I was going to actually make way more inappropriate jokes, so I snuck one in at
mechanism,
the 100.
Yeah. And I hope...
yeah, totally.
And, well, I guess you wouldn't call me out on this anyway, but I hope you take my ribbing... in the spirit in which it's intended. Of course, we're rooting for you.
I would call
you
out on it. This is new, Luke, Andrew. You don't even know that.
Okay, well.
But no, I take everything that I take everything you said in the spirit it was intended, and again, I really appreciate you. And I don't want to talk about it anymore because it all start crying.
Okay.
So let's wrap this up. Right, you got the you still have Katie and Little Hoagie ready to go.
Oh yeah,
because my current technical setup precludes me from playing that. So,
right.
Anyway. Thanks for listening, everybody. I love all of you, and I appreciate you being part of TBTL. We're going to do No Point after this, but for the rest of you, I will see you, and Andrew will see you tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Expect no more than all elastic day. Hold your feelings back for all elastic day. Trim it on. Try to all aside for all elastic days. Feel the need I tried for all elastic days. Elastic days. Elastic days. Elastic days.
Alright, I know you know about TBTL the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Wilson passes the ball to the end zone. Touchdown. You know we're gonna get the crown in Super Bowl 24. Team, we get the ring to bling. Listen to the crowd sing. Seahawks, Seahawks, Seahawks. We block that offense. To say we'll lose is such an offense and nonsense. We got the best defense. Being the other quarterback comes with the expense of the act of being sacked. I hope the Broncos have enough time to react to the level of game the Hawks are bringing that evening, a Super Bowl Sunday, cause they're gonna go all the way for the win, starting when the game begins, all the way to the end of the game, and to go down in fame as the Super Bowl champions of this year. This team should be feared.
You better saddle up when you roll with Seattle. Broncos seem like some old cattle left.
I think I've realized that this song is like tofu. Welcome, by the way, to the No Point Conversion, everybody. This song takes on the flavor of however I'm feeling about the Seahawks.
So on a week, ominous.
Like after, yeah, post Detroit, I was like, ah, oh, the beautiful sounds of K-Dude and Little Hoagie. But then after a game where it feels like Russell Wilson can't get enough protection to throw the ball more than 5 yards downfield, I'm like, why is this song so mournful? Anyway, welcome to the No Point, everybody. Where do we start? Start with the Browns or the Seahawks? Are you cool starting with the Seahawks?
Yeah, let's do the Seahawks. I think that's a more interesting conversation.
Probably because they are theoretically still, they have the possibility of being in contention for the playoffs, I guess, whereas the Browns are not going to make the playoffs this year statistically.
Yesterday was just way more interesting in Seattle than in Cleveland, I think.
Yeah, so the Seahawks, as you all know at this point, if you're Seahawks fans or you follow football, Seahawks lost to the Chargers 25-17. It was a very weird game because basically the Chargers, other than the first drive of the game for the Seahawks, the Chargers dominated Seattle. And the only way that it was even kind of close was because the Chargers kicker had just a real meltdown, almost to the point where I almost felt bad for him. And I'm, you know, rooting actively against the Chargers' fortunes, and yet I was like, oh, this poor son of a bitch. I assume he's probably been cut because you just can't. I mean, he'd missed 10 kicks in like two or three games and bananas. Like, if he makes the extra points, the field goal is not a total chip shot, but basically what happened was, like, Los Angeles, it hurts me to call them the Los Angeles Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the Chargers were vastly superior as a team to the Seahawks. Their offense was much better than our offense. Their defense was stouter than our defense. They were better in every phase of the game, but they just kind of had they stepped on their own shoelaces a bunch and left it so there was a very small chance of the Seahawks actually somehow tying the game. So it ended up being a thrilling end to the game, but that was not representative of the overall game. Like, I think we really got outplayed. Now, one thing is the Chargers are actually a good team. You were the one that pointed that out, Andrew. I'm so used to the Chargers being abysmal that when I looked at them on the schedule, I was like, okay, well, we got a win with the Chargers, and we'll have a win with the Chargers, and then it's time to really buckle down and focus on, you know, the Rams and the Packers and the Panthers. And you said, yeah, the Chargers don't suck. And you were right. The Chargers are a good team. The problem for the Seahawks, as I see it, is that they were still probably the most beatable team of the four, where, you know,
that were
Rams,
coming up.
Packers, Panthers, of the four that we were about to play, and considering we were at home, that was the most winnable game for us. And we just got done not winning it. So I'm pretty stressed out. That's not true. I'm not stressed out. I don't have high hopes about us winning a bunch of these other games, and so I kind of think that our chances of making it to the playoffs I think this was a pretty severe hit to our, as our friend Durs said, our shot at making the playoffs took a pretty big hit yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny how 4-4 feels compared to 5-3
right?
That I was hoping. And to even look at the standings now, I mean, we're almost blessed with, like, we're in a 4-team division and two of the teams are terrible. Two of the teams are just terrible. 2-6, 2-7. We're in second place with a pretty measly 4-4 record. The problem is we're in the same division as the Rams, who are
practically
unbeatable, although they're 8-1 now.
Yeah. I was rooting for the Rams to beat every other team because we're not going to catch the Rams. So all we can hope for is that there are enough other wild card ish teams that all kind of take a beating at the hands of the Rams. If I thought there was a realistic chance we could catch them, of course it'd be great to win the division. But that ship has sailed. So all we can hope is that the New Orleans and the Green Bays of the world and the Minnesotas of the world, peace and love to the Stubot, all the other teams that might be in the wild card. Although I think Minnesota's going to win their division, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's no way we're winning the West. So just we got to do what we got to. Another thing. So, I mean, something, look, Detroit is peace and love to our fans in Detroit. Detroit is not as good a team as the Chargers. I think the Seahawks looked really good against Detroit to some degree because of Detroit's makeup this season. But also, what happened yesterday, I guess I'm going to flip back to the positive side is when we had our players healthy, i.e. Chris Carson, we looked okay. As soon as we lost Chris Carson, like, in other words, we lost yesterday, and we lost with a number of key players coming into the game trying to play and then basically not being able to go. And when we lost those key players, we had a hard time. And that kind of, like, story checks out, right? It's like, yeah, you lose your best running back, and so now you have a hard time running the ball. You lose DJ Fluker, one of your better linemen, and now you have a hard time protecting Russell Wilson. Like, it isn't like we had everybody out there at full strength and we just couldn't do it. It was like we were playing without some really key people, and that kind of showed on the field, which I guess the only solace that provides me is just that, like, it kind of makes sense that we wouldn't play as well, right?
Yeah, it's too bad. The Seahawks should have gotten Carlos Hyde. Turns out Browns were selling him for, like, a stick of gum and a nickel a couple of weeks ago. But, yeah, that is a bummer. When did Carson go out? I can't recall that. He made it through the first half, right?
Yeah, he made it through the first quarter. He had 40 yards in the first half, which is – and I want to say it was more like 40 yards through the first quarter. Mm-hmm. We had a beautiful – for opening drive, where we just, like, chewed up all this clock and we just ran the ball at will, and mostly behind Chris Carson. So he was great up until he re-injured his hip or whatever. And I want to say that was, like, midway through the second. There was a point at which we had the ball, and all of a sudden it was Mike Davis out there, not Chris Carson. And I want to say that was midway through the second quarter.
Yeah, that sounds
about
right.
He was playing well when he was out there. And even Mike Davis, you know, I will say one other positive. I do think we sort of stayed true to trying to run the ball, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, Mike Davis did have some effective runs. We didn't just give up on it the way we have. What was really troubling was, like, I don't think that Los Angeles has some storied defensive line. Like, it's not like you're playing against, you know, the Rams or something. Like, I don't understand why it was that we could not protect Russell Wilson.
I know.
And I also, like, I don't know why that was happening, and I will tell you another thing. Russell Wilson has lost a step, and it's,
yeah.
I knew it was going to happen, but I thought this was going to be, how old is Russell Wilson? Was he like 28 or something?
I'm not sure, yeah.
I thought this was going to be Russell Wilson's best year because I thought, he's healthy. He's probably at his athletic peak. And, you know, he is, like, this is going to be, I did not expect him to lose a step this early in his career. I still think he's a good quarterback. I definitely am, like, very happy he is our quarterback. I'm not starting a campaign to have him not do it. But I'm just saying I am personally surprised that this is the season where he has visibly lost a step. And mm-hmm. he definitely has. It's weird. I would have thought it would have been like next season or something. I guess that's just his body.
Well, he matured early. And he was injured. I mean, he really played through that injury last year. I mean, that could have changed
maybe
his, you know, maybe flexibility or comfort back there as well. But you're right. I mean, I don't think either one of us would say, oh, we have to get rid of him. But the team does then have to adapt to that. And maybe that's some of the growing pains
right.
we were seeing with the new offensive coordinator at the beginning of the year. It seemed like they were trying to really keep him in the pocket more than he seemed comfortable doing. Oh, hey, while we're getting in a little bit of the needy-greedy here, I had a question for you because I'm not great at knowing – I mean, I think, you know, when I'm watching a game, I have my own gut reaction about whether something was a good call or a bad call offensively. Defensively, I can't read that shit at all. But did it seem weird to you in, like, I don't know, I'm going to say maybe the second quarter of the game, we're kind of really struggling. And it seemed like a lot of plays were designed to have Russell throwing to, like, kind of rolling out to his left instead of his right in an uncomfortable way that didn't make sense to me. He's a right-handed thrower, and it seems natural for him to kind of roll out to the right and maybe catch somebody while he's running. I love that move so much. He's so sweet when he buys himself a little bit of extra time as a designed play, not always as just a scrambling maniac. And he sees somebody maybe in the flat, and he kind of can shovel pass. He just keeps his options open. He's running. He looks good. But when he runs to the left, that seems like a disadvantage because he's a right-handed thrower. And there were a couple of times I'm like, why are they having him roll out to the left? Did you notice that?
I didn't notice there would be an unusually high number of those plays, which could have been just because half of the game I was hiking the football down the hall for Rudy, trying to make her chase it because she was harassing DFTB.
Mm-hmm. Sunday! Did you yell that a lot?
Sorry, I kept yelling Omaha.
Omaha!
But what I would say, my guess at that would be part of it is misdirection. And so because that's not a natural... Mm. Because that's not a natural way for him to go. If they're doing a play action, it would be the kind of thing where they might think they're going to get better effect of fooling the defense if they have him faking the handoff and then going in a direction that would not be his natural direction. There's something psychological for the defense where that might make the fake handoff more effective because they're thinking he's not going to roll left and throw right, mm-hmm. as it were. That would be my guess. But, I mean, I'll tell you something. One of my complaints, for a long time, I complained that they haven't run the read option with Russell enough, which is like the play where he can either hand it off or keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the read option with Russell keeping it is like a morphine drip, and I'm in a hospital bed, and I've got the button for it. If it were up to me, I would hit it every play because mm-hmm. it's so sweet. It only works like twice a game, and the way you set it up is by actually handing it off most of the time, and then like the one time you don't hand it off, the defense is not ready because you've handed it off 40 times. That's not a real number. You've handed it off 12 times in a row, and the 13th time you keep it, and that's how you get them on that play. So I'm always like looking for the read option Russell keeper, but I'm going to tell you something. They did it a few times yesterday, and dude is not very elusive anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, God bless. I mean, he had a couple desperation runs where and this is not me being critical of him about his wanting it, but like they ran the read option a couple times where he kept it, and I was like, this is not a very good play for us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, and maybe you're right. I hadn't even thought about that. He was injured, and maybe that injury that he had last year that he played through, I mean, he may not have come back from that the same athlete. And that's okay, like you said. I mean, they just have to start to adjust for it. I mean, really what it comes down to is I think if Chris Carson would have been healthy the whole game, we would have won the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because our defense did figure out Phillip Rivers to a large degree. Let's not forget, they gashed us. Their running game killed us. But I do think our defense was okay. They were the sixth best offense in the NFL coming into it. And I think they averaged the most yards per play of any offense in the NFL. So it's like it's not surprising that we're getting gashed by a team that has been gashing everyone. I think if Chris Carson was healthy, we would have won the game. Here's what I'm going to say, though, and this is the closest I'll come to a hot take today. So buckle up.
Rome is burning.
God. If a genie came to me and gave me one wish, I would use it on the worst wish, and it would be that KPUG, the sports leader in Bellingham, would stop playing Jim fucking Rome.
Oh, are they still playing him?
At the time when I tend to be running mm-hmm. morning errands and I could really use some good sports talk,
uh-huh.
and I just like turn it on, it's just like Bills Mafia checking in. I'm just like, fucking die, you worm of a sports host. Anyway, Bills Mafia checking in. Here's my hot take. I think we might still need to go out and spend a bunch of money to get a good running back. And the reason is because I think Chris Carson has durability issues. Mm. Chris Carson is a awesome running back when he is healthy, but he has not been healthy enough. And there are just players like that. What is rarely seen, you have players like Albert Kamara, who is a running back for the Saints, and he's just a beast, and he just runs. And I don't know his exact injury record. Somebody might email in and say he's been hurt a lot, but not that I remember. Chris Carson, I think, is going to go down, unfortunately, as one of those guys. It's like a great player when he can play, but there's a lot of times that he can't play. I think it's too dangerous to have our fortunes riding on Chris Carson, because we at this point have to have a solid running game for Russell Wilson to be effective. Mm-hmm. There's the days of Russell Wilson making it happen all on his own by scrambling and creating miracle plays. Those days are over. That's fine. But we have to adjust to the reality of the world. The realities of the world as I see them. Russell Wilson has lost a step. I'm not drinking anymore. And Chris Carson has durability issues. Those are the three things I know about the world on this Monday. And by the way, to anyone who just tunes in for the No Point, that's some breaking news for you. Can you imagine somebody who somehow just like skips through the first hour and 40 minutes of the show and just picks up at Lil Hoagie and K-Dude?
Well, we had talked about breaking this segment out and just like publishing it separately in our feed. I don't know. I think
get more downloads.
Couldn't get everybody on board for a meeting or something. But that would be interesting to see how many people actually show up for this. I mean, what if this segment had better ratings than the... That would be amazing. If we had a Monday show and then a Monday No Point separate feed... And the separate feed did better than the TBTL.
Well, we'd know it's time to pivot.
Yes, right.
Into all uninformed sports talk. So anyway, that's I guess what I'm just to I'll wrap up what I have to say about the Seahawks, and then I'll turn it over to you for anything you want to talk about, and then we can talk about the Browns. But I guess you know the Detroit game was exciting because it kind of felt like this team is who Pete Carroll and John Schneider thought they could be. And I don't think that that feeling was inaccurate. I think that the problem is this: you fast forward to this week and Chris Carson goes back to being injured, and then the team loses this incredibly important part. So in other words, when Chris Carson is healthy and running, I think that we are a good NFL team, and I think we could go to the playoffs. When our running game is not able to happen because of injury, I think that we get in real trouble. And so that's just the story of this team this year. And I don't think we're going to probably make the playoffs, which is I can live with that as long as I feel like we're progressing in a way where next season we are ready to really, you know, compete. So I'm a little bummed out that glimmer that happened in Detroit probably was a little bit over excitement on my part. But I still feel basically hopeful about what I feel hopeful about is that we may not go to the playoffs this season, but if we make some adjustments in the offseason, I very much see a world in which we could be a good team next year and totally be, you know, maybe not competing for the West because it's going to be a long time before the Rams come back to Earth, but we could definitely be a solid football team next year with Russell Wilson just passing the ball. So I feel hopeful about that.
Yeah, it was a tough game to watch because they did look so bad on offense. And, you know, it's not just a win-loss thing. And in fact, people who do listen to this segment regularly, I wonder how much I sound like a broken record on this. But there are some games where you lose. I mean, we'll get into this with the Browns because I say it a lot with them. You have low expectations for the Browns. They're rebuilding. You're looking for, you know, signs of improvement week over week. You're looking for sparks of strength, for lack of a better word. And you can see those things and still lose a game. We saw that with the Seahawks-Rams game of 3-4 weeks ago. They lost that game, but knowing what we knew about the Seahawks going into that, they put on a better show than we thought they would, and so it still felt good. And then the next two games that they played, they were playing teams that they probably should have beaten, but they beat them handily, and that felt really good, that they were blowing out who they needed to blow out. Yesterday's game was the first one in a while where it felt more like week one of yeah. this season where
we were
like,
sort of regressing.
Yeah, who are these guys? And we can't. And it just looked. It was kind of painful to watch at times, seeing Russell scramble around down there, the pocket yeah. collapsing immediately, just not being able to get a foothold. And of course, the penalties. And we haven't even talked about that. You know, I watched 3 or 4 football games this weekend, so I'm really trying hard in my brain. I didn't take any notes. I'm hoping I'm not crossing my wires. But it seemed like, yeah, it was definitely the Seahawks yesterday. It was just like. Penalty after penalty after dumb decision. And it was also sacks. I mean, there were how many – I wish I did have these stats. Like, how many third and longs did we have yesterday? And I mean, some of these were third and long. Like, third and unmanageable, as I once named a fantasy football team, I think. It just – and they put themselves in this position, and it was just frustrating to see. There goes the – bring out the punter again. Bring out the punter again. Yeah. And that's what sucked about this, was that it was not just a loss, but just a loss that seemed really regressive to me.
Yeah, I definitely thought we regressed. I also, you know, this is – it's not a good look to complain about the officiating, because everybody gets – let me start by saying we got lucky on a couple calls where there was one play where they threw a really long pass. It was incomplete, and our defender clearly, I thought, grabbed the face mask of their receiver, and had that call gone down, they would have had the ball on like the 8-yard line.
Oh, I remember that.
So there were certainly moments where we probably did something bad and it didn't get called, but there were a couple of real drive killer penalties that I thought were extremely dicey. Primarily the pick call they called on David Moore, I think, where it was like a really big pass play where we were moving the ball and they called a pick play, which is, I mean, what was frustrating, which is for people that don't know, which would be weird if you were listening to this, but you didn't know what that was, just because I feel like this would be so boring. But anyway, it's where basically one receiver runs a pattern that is designed to sort of bump into the defenders so that a different receiver on the same team can get open. It's like setting a screen in basketball. You're not allowed to do it, but all teams do it. And in fact, I watched Sunday Night Football last night and watched some of the most I watched the Patriots run some of the most egregious pick plays I've ever seen. And you might be surprised, Andrew, I don't know if you're sitting down to hear that those were not called on the Patriots, but that call against us was really a killer. And then there was another one too that I'm forgetting. And then there was the fact that a guy pretty clearly stepped out of bounds. I mean, his heel went out of bounds, but it was one of those plays where they had called it in, and so it wasn't quite enough to reverse it.
And there's a touchdown play. I gotta
that
say,
that was a touchdown play.
I mean, people were just out of their minds over that one. It looked pretty egregious to me, but I'm not on the leading edge of fury over that one. Yes. Can we call the show the leading edge of fury? Because
on the edge of fury.
To me, I'm not 100% sure, because people were just sharing that. I mean, it looks kind of obvious. Look at this screen grab. You can see his white shoe is in the white of the sideline, but you can't really see if his heel is down or not, and that needed to be overturned.
I agree with you that it was by no means the most egregious call to go against. What hurt about it, or to go against any team, what hurt about it for me was that it was coming. It felt like we were getting kind of no breaks at the same time they were getting. Let's just say that one was a coin flip. It was like the coin came down for them. And then there was other ones that were a coin flip for us, and the coin came down for them.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like – that was why it was painful. But I mean, you know, we lost the game because we couldn't tackle Melvin Gordon. And we just had people, including KJ Wright, like I'm a little – we definitely need to move on from this. But there were times where I mean, there were some really nice plays by KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner, and then some times where I saw them taking lines on plays where they were just like really out of position. And it was kind of like – I wondered if it was a thing where they, like, KJ Wright's been hurt, and it was like maybe he's not really quite ready to come back, and he's trying to just be a hero, and it's like it's you know, it means that he's not as effective. Who knows? But I mean, to me, it's like if we have a running game, we're a playoff team, and if we don't have a running game, we're very feckless. And during the part of the game where we had Chris Carson, we were a pretty good team, and then he got hurt, and then we were not a very good team. And I just, to me, it's almost that simple. So that's why I'm like, I think we got to go out and get us like a marquee running back who we can rely on to stay healthy. And I think if we do that in the off season, I think we'll be pretty good next year. Okay. So, From the Seahawks losing to the Browns losing, that was a tough game. They lost to the Chiefs. The Chiefs are just like a juggernaut.
They're good, man.
I was listening on the Cleveland radio station as I was driving around on Sunday, and that they kept calling it the Cleveland Connection because it probably didn't help that Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce are both from basically the larger Cleveland area.
Yeah, I didn't realize that
for the Chiefs just destroying their hometown team.
I didn't realize that for either one of them. Like, one of them was from, like, Willoughby, and the other one was from Cleveland proper or something. Oh, man, I'm just checking my fantasy, too. I thought I had this in hand, but I didn't. Unless my running back can score... Oh, well, my running back just has to score 12 points tonight. That could happen.
Who's your running back?
Ezekiel Elliott. So I think
that could totally happen.
Right? Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, that's not madness. You need a touchdown, and you need him to... Oh, 12 points. Yeah, if he goes over 100 yards or scores a touchdown, he's good. I'm still starting people who are on their bye week because I can't hack into the mainframe. So when I say the quarterback is toast, what I mean is I'm starting a piece of toast at quarterback because I'm unable to get into the system. But anyway, enough about my fantasy team.
Let's see. We're supposed to be talking about the Browns here now. Sorry, I'm back in. Yeah. I'm playing Josh Kearns, which is somebody who I actually know in real life, so I'd really like to lacquer him. Is that no... So, what's the word? Shellacker him. It's a combination of the two.
I hardly knew her.
yesterday, I alluded to this already. It was a one of those games where going in, as much as I said I was going to like predict games for the Browns and the Seahawks to win every week this year, just because I felt like that would be a good mental place. First of all, that's dubious thinking. And second of all, I knew going into this game the Browns weren't going to win it. I mean, they're playing the best or maybe, I guess, the second best team in football right now. I knew it was going to be a tough one. And we're coming – this is the first week, of course, after the head coach was fired, after the offensive coordinator was fired. Having both of those positions cut in the same week is very unusual. Usually you would think one of them would have won out. So we had an interim head coach who was the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams. We talked about him last week. We had this guy named Kitchens, who I'd never heard of before, promoted internally to be running the offense. And there was a lot of concern. One of the reasons I think Hugh and the offensive coordinator, Haley, were cut or fired was because there was a lot of complaint about not getting the ball to our star players. Your Dukes Johnson Jr., if you will. You know, your who else? Well, the Jarvis Landry issue kind of continues. Nick Chubb, another running back. And they just weren't getting the ball into the hands of these guys who could be big playmakers. And clearly the new assist, or I guess the new interim offensive coordinator, acknowledged that, realized that, and we saw Duke Johnson receiving for you know, the most. He's a running back who's also gets a lot of touches through receiving, and we saw him get the ball a lot yesterday, like significant compared to the seven games leading up to yesterday's game or eight games, and that was good. I mean, we did not get blown out. We lost by more than two touchdowns, so maybe that is a blowout, but it wasn't a blowout like I expected, and it didn't feel terrible. The week before, the loss to the Steelers was terrible. We never had it except for the first drive of the game. A little bit like yesterday's Seattle Seahawks game, only worse. Like, it was embarrassing. It was terrible to watch. It was a shit product, and it just was awful. Yesterday was a loss that didn't feel that bad. It looked like, you know, we were talking about the Seahawks. You see glimpses of hope. You see change coming. You see when you shake things up a little bit and get the ball into other people's hands, things can happen with this team. The problem is, as good as the Browns defense is, and we do have a Browns defense, the Chiefs offense is just unstoppable. I really don't take away from yesterday's game that the Browns have a problem on defense. The Chiefs are just so goddamn good in the air, and that's what happened. So we lost by a couple of touchdowns, and they went for it on the Browns. Every time they had a chance to make an extra point, they went for two, which did not pay off.
Respect.
Me too, man.
I know it didn't.
They went for it on fourth down three times, got two out of three on fourth down. Just like, I kind of liked this aggressiveness that Greg Williams was showing.
And I was like, well, you know, it's like, yeah, we're going to have to, like, this Pinto has, you know, 250,000 miles on it. It's been totaled. It's got a salvage title on it. No one's gonna buy it. Fuck it. Let's floor it. Like, I kind of like, not that I think that's the Browns, but I just like the kind of, I'm surprised more teams, like, unless Greg Williams really thinks he's going to get the job, which maybe I don't understand the coaching mechanics, and maybe he is in line to get the job. Mm. But I like the idea to some degree of him just being like, yeah, fuck it. We're going to go for 2 points every time, and we're going to go for it on fourth down. We have literally nothing to lose. I thought that was kind of cool. I also thought it was a good omen that I somehow got the Browns game on a Canadian feed on my Real TV.
You texted me about that yesterday at some point. It just came into my phone yesterday. I'm having some weird phone issues. It just came into my phone this morning. But, yeah, so you're watching some Canadians love the Browns. Am I responsible for that too?
Ladies love Cool J and Canadians love the Browns. Mm-hmm. I was like, I went on the TV because David was coming up and we were going to watch the Browns game. And I figured I'm going to have to do a whole thing where I find it online and then mirror it to my TV or whatever. But I just was like, let me see if it's on. And I went on the speaker microphone thing, Cleveland Browns. And it told me it was on channel 21, which is not in HD. It's called CTV. And it was running a 2-hour infomercial about charitable donations for cleft palate surgeries for children in developing countries. So I was like, this doesn't seem like a promising NFL pregame programming, but we'll see what happens. And sure enough, they had the Browns game on.
Wow.
I don't know. What's weird is it's not like over the air. I didn't like intercept an over the air thing from Canada. It's in cable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was sent down a line to my house, which violates all manner of NFL rules.
Oh.
About, you know what I mean? Like, the NFL's got shit blacked out every single place. So I don't know why this was on my TV, but it felt like a minor miracle, and I thought it boded well for the team. It did not bode as well as I thought. But yeah, I'm with you.
I think I figured it out, though. You know what happened was, and I should look this up to see if this is true. I bet you that people had been watching the Browns and they thought they were a CFL football team. And just
they're like, what team does Johnny Manziel play for?
Right.
The Browns.
Right.
Oh yeah, they're definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, the Kamloops Browns?
Anyway, so you were going to say you agree with me. That's a bad time to cut you off when you say I agree with you.
No, not at all. No, I agree with you that they looked – I thought Baker Mayfield looked pretty good at times. I also ran to Taco Time at some point, so I didn't watch every moment of the game. But I thought Baker Mayfield looked pretty good at times. I thought that Duke Johnson looked good. I thought Jarvis Landry had some nice catches, and Njoku had a couple of decent catches. Mm-hmm. Like, the team – you're right. They're playing the best offense. Either Rudy started putting on cologne or someone pepper sprayed the house because I'm having some coughing problems.
Do you want to take a moment?
No, I think I'm okay. Anyway, nothing a little polar seltzer water won't fix. Anyway, I think they were just playing the best offense in football. And so they're going to put up points on you, which they did. But yeah, they didn't look pathetic. They didn't look like they had no business being on the field with them. They looked like they were playing them pretty well. There was a couple of key turnovers that happened, which kind of put the game out of reach. But all in all, I'm with you. It seemed less depressing than the previous week. It's like there are losses and then there are like losses.
Yeah.
And this wasn't one of those. This was just like, yeah, you ran into a buzzsaw called Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
It was a real bummer because I didn't get to deploy my Mahomie don't play that joke.
That's right. You told us, so you had
but
it on standby.
I'll wait. I'll keep that powder dry.
The Chiefs play. Oh, yeah, the Chiefs will play the Seahawks second to last game of
that's going to be brutal.
That'll be right
not even
Christmas.
To me, not even as much because of Mahomes, although that's going to suck. But I just think we just can't stop. We just, for some reason, cannot stop the run game. I mean, Phillip Rivers got some passes off on us, but I honestly think that it was the running game that really killed us. Like, I mean, it was a combination of things, but it's like I'm more afraid of Kareem Hunt than I am of even Mahomes, you know,
mm-hmm.
throwing it to Tyreek Hill or whatever.
And Kelsey.
Although it's hard to pick. I'm afraid of everything as it relates to that offense.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? All right, man. Well,
yeah.
What
quick thing I was just
going
to say about a couple of things about the refs. Just like hearing you talk about how, you know, things didn't bounce the right way for Seattle. I'm not trying to whatever, compare and contrast here. Although, allow me to compare and contrast. Man, the Browns have just gotten screwed so much in calls this this year. There was one really bad blown call. I believe it was in the first quarter. And so it wasn't even after a long day of blown calls by the officials. It was pretty early on. The announcers not even for a moment considered the referee's point of view as far as just not calling obvious pass interference, defensive pass interference against the Chargers that would have put the Browns on the 1 yard line at one point. And the announcers on TV were just like, I don't understand how you don't call that. Like, he's all over the guy. Like, that is a completely blown call. And I just want to kind of, now, I don't think that the Browns would have won yesterday. There were not a preponderance of blown calls yesterday, and I just don't think the Browns are going to win yesterday's game. But I will say that one NFL was fired mid-season, a rarity, because of a blown call against against the Browns. It would actually have been a blown call against, I believe it was the Raiders game. The Raiders went offsides, got a touchdown. The offsides was never called. That referee was actually fired after that, and they cited that. And another referee was kind of called out on the carpet for the head-to-head hit. Remember we talked about that, the helmet-to-helmet hit, the targeting call that they picked the flag up and said no, there was no problem there against our quarterback? They ended up apologizing for that.
Yes, you were totally right about that. And the league sided with you ultimately that was a totally blown call. Yeah, it's so messed up. It's like, if I know that all this is like, you know, all politics is local, as I say too often on the show. But like, I know all bad calls are local in that it just feels so personal, and everyone has their list of. Again, if I was a Chargers fan from yesterday, I would have been livid about the no call on the face mat. I could have picked a bunch of places where I felt like I was getting screwed, so my team was getting screwed. I totally get that. But it does feel like when you're a team like the Browns, you just keep getting the fuzzy end of the flipping lollipop, and it feels like when you're a team like the Patriots, you just get – I mean, I was watched that game last night, and there were like multiple calls where I thought that the Green Bay, and again, Green Bay is a storied franchise themselves, but there were multiple times where I just felt like Green Bay was just getting completely hosed on the calls, because it's like the magical Tom Brady, and you're playing in Foxborough, and like it just, I know it. This is probably just in my head, and I don't like conspiracy theories, and what I'm saying is very close to a conspiracy theory. But it just feels like the rich get richer in the NFL in terms of like the teams that are already good tend to benefit from sketchy calls, and the teams that are just struggling to keep their head above water seem to just get the worst of it. But
it's weird because there's supposed to be so much.
It's all anecdotal.
Yeah, and there's supposed to be so much parity in the NFL too. Like when you look at the salary caps and the way that the system works and the drafting system, like they're really, it's supposed to be one of the more equitable leagues, right? But then you have the
There's a lot of parity, and it's generally effective. You know what I mean? There are a couple of franchises, that because of having a really stellar quarterback and a really good system, have been able to just stay competitive, and those franchises are obviously Green Bay and the Patriots, and that's a testament to them. You know, I give the Patriots a lot of shit, but it's like, look, I mean, they're playing under the same rules as everybody else. They've just got this really great quarterback and a really good system that Bill Belichick has designed. Hey, you know what? They deserve it, even though it makes me mad. Same thing with Green Bay. They got this amazing quarterback, and they always figure out how to cycle in, you know, the right people with him, so they're almost always competitive. Seahawks are kind of close to that, in that they, you know, other than last year when they didn't make the playoffs, I think they've been generally competitive throughout the Pete Carroll era, which is pretty cool. They're not quite where those other teams are. I guess we'll see what happens with LA. Like, an example of where the parity of the league comes in is a team like Dallas. Dallas has tons of money, tons of fan base. They're America's team. And yet, you know, they've had some real shit seasons, and that to me is a testament to how the NFL system does work at creating parity. Because, like, the Yankees, the thing about baseball that really hacks me off is that, yes, the same team doesn't win the World Series every single year, but it's almost always one of a short list of teams. And then about every 5 years, some other team pops their head up like a groundhog looking for their shadow from a small market, and then they win it. But it's usually either the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, or the Giants. And then every once in a while, it's the Royals. Every once in a while, it's the Rockies. Every once in a while, it's some small market team. But it's like there is not parity in MLB the way there is in the NFL. And I'm sorry I just went on that tangent. I realized I've had a lot of coffee, and my head is now slowly detaching from my body. So maybe that's a good time to end the no point.
Well, then let me bring it back to regular TBTL talk, because I just got an email from TouchTunes, which is the one of the software apps, one of the apps that you can control a jukebox with.
Oh, I know about software apps.
But I think this must have something to do with you. These are my top three songs of October. Comfortably Numb by the Scissor Sisters, by Blur, and You and Tequila by Kenny Chesney. Were you guys playing these when we were in St. Paul? Because I would never play any of those. Okay.
Yup. That was all me at the camp.
Okay. Oh, the camp.
That was me trying to get the mood. I mean, that was me trying to get the mood going with some Scissor Sisters at 2:30. Oh, we had fun.
Oh, a good time.
Yeah. So those are all top plays. I mean, unfortunately, we are contractually and ethically bound to go out with Badfinger here. But I'll never be mad at any of those three songs being the go-out music on a given episode of TBTL. Anyway, all right, man. Are you ready with the speaking of Badfinger?
I am
ready to rock.
Totally ready. We've been nailing. I just want to reiterate to the listeners that I have not been editing or tightening this. When you play the drop, I just know, like, as he says sport the second time, I hit play on this, and it's been.
I love it. You're adjusting for the time delay.
Yes, it's been great.
That's very professional.
I'll screw it up here.
I'm tempted to mess with you here, but I'm not going to because.
Okay, thank you.
It's been a long day, and I just all I want is to end this on an excellent note.
We're all fragile.
Here we go. See you tomorrow, everybody.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
Power out.